Sex, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the speculative interdimensional vehicle, Sex in Space. Its mission, to explore new points of view, to seek out fresh opinions, to boldly go where so many have gone before, and still somehow manage to totally miss the point. Subscribe to Sex in Space, wherever quality podcasts are found.
Hi there, and welcome back to Sex in Space. I'm Toshi, and we're really excited to have you with us today for another podcast episode. Wherever you're tuning in from, thanks for being with us. Please don't forget to leave a like, comment, or review. Your feedback and support always means the world to us. If you want to check out some more great Sex in Space content, head on over to our YouTube channel, which has video versions of our podcast episodes if you'd rather watch and listen at the same time. You can search for us using our handle at sexinspace.com, and you can also find us on Instagram and TikTok under that handle too. For today's episode, I was really excited to chat with Zoe Madden-Smith. Zoe is a multimedia journalist for ReNews, which is an online news platform here in New Zealand. She has a passion for telling stories that center and resonate with young people, being 26 years old herself. And she's especially drawn to stories about sex, health, and anything that's seen as too taboo to talk about, which are some of the things that we love to talk about here at Sex in Space. Zoe is very good at what she does. She was nominated for a Video Journalist of the Year and Best Feature Video in the 2023 Voyager Media Awards, and was runner-up Junior Feature Writer of the Year in 2022. Zoe also has experience directing and producing a whole bunch of short and long-form stories. So she's very talented, and we're very excited to be chatting with her today. So welcome, Zoe.
Thank you.
So you have a really interesting job, and we've been really enjoying seeing the work that you've been doing over the last year, because that's kind of when we found you and started looking at your work. And I was wondering for our listeners if you could maybe unpack a little bit about what it is that you do at ReNews.
Yeah, sure. So multimedia journalist, what that kind of means at Re is that you're pretty much, because we are quite a small team, it's only about 10 of us, 10 or 11, and about, I think, 5 journalists at the moment, and everyone's a multimedia journalist. And so you are writing stories, you're filming stories, you're editing stories, and it's pretty much working on your own quite a bit, but there's a lot of chances for you to kind of work in a team. You go away, for example, or in like bigger series that we do, we work in teams. But essentially, it's just trying to figure out what young people want to learn about. So TVNZ figured out they actually weren't reaching youth very well. They could reach Tamariki quite well with their younger programs, and then they can reach like over 30, 35 with the news. That kind of 15, 16 to 30, 35 group was getting missed out. And so they essentially made Re, I think it was in 2017, to try and figure out how to reach young people. And we're doing okay. It's getting better. It was really hard. It's like one of the hardest audiences to reach, because they're competing. You're competing with Netflix, you're competing with TikTok, you're competing with everything. And unless people want to read the news, they just may not start. Like, a lot of my friends don't read the news at all, really, or they listen to Re, which is great. But I think it was trying to figure out what young people need and also how they want to receive it as well. So like, it's really hard to get young people off Instagram, and so we have learned that like, you just have to tell the entire story on Instagram, or tell as much as you can on TikTok. So essentially every day is figuring out what they want to know, but also telling in a way that they'll want to find it and easily find it, and then also be able to relate to it, understand it as well.
I mean, I personally, like, whenever I see it on my Instagram, I find it really good because it's so like bite-sized, and so it's kind of like really easy to engage with, whereas, you know, I guess putting yourself onto like an actual news site, like on your phone or on the laptop, is a bit more work, whereas if it's just on my feed, like, I'm on there anyway, so if I see oh cool, now I can see, you know, the highlights for the day.
Exactly, then, the headlines. Yeah. Well, that should be one of our biggest successes, I think. That people just, I myself, I can feel that my attention span is shocking, even though I literally work in news, which is terrible. And so it's just, which is so sad, because sometimes you write this beautiful long article that's like, because my passion is feature writing, and so I love to write long articles. And then then it's like, how do you fit it into 10 slides? Otherwise, no one's going to be able to like read most of it. And so you have a lot of your darlings. I still write for the website, but with the understanding that essentially very few will probably read the whole article. So it is a bit brutal. But I think that's just the nature of news and how quickly news is changing, and you just have to kind of embrace it. You can't fight it, because if you try and fight it, people are just not going to relate to it. So
yeah. And can you tell us a bit about how you got into this kind of work?
Yeah, sure. So I actually, in high school, wanted to be a fashion designer, which is kind of random, but then worked in fashion quite a bit with my mum. And then realized how fucking hard it is to do. And so I actually wanted to kind of go into journalism potentially to be like a fashion journalist. And so I worked at Fashion Quarterly for a little while as an intern, which was really cool. And I loved it because it was very glamorous and there were photo shoots and things. And I loved all of that. But I kind of realized that it wasn't quite what I was after, because I think I was, I don't know, I think at university I became quite opinionated, like a lot of Gen Zs kind of become like very interested in like social justice. And I felt that I was writing a lot of stories about, like, I think my first story actually at Fashion Quarterly, Miss Fashion Quarterly, was like the junior platform, was about like pimple popping and then Lindsay Lohan's like bad dye job. And I was just like, do I really feel like this is where I want to be? Do I think I could be doing more? And there were better stories around just like fashion on its own, which I really loved doing. But I think I was kind of not feeling like I got that same sense of like, this is really important to me, I'm really excited by this. And so at university, I started doing more stories around like inequality, te ao Māori and those kind of things. And did my internship that you do at AUT, so the AUT comms degree, advice. And that was great because I thought that advice had that really nice kind of edgy, quite left wing, quite exciting. And I really enjoyed that. And so ended up doing some bit of work there after my internship. And then I went away and did my my last year in postgrad overseas, and then came back. And my boss at Vice had moved to Re. And she was like, you should come write for us. And had been at Re ever since. So it's been about, I think, just over 4 years.
Amazing.
Yeah. So a bit of a change of plan, but definitely that I got here because I'm enjoying it a lot.
I mean, that's how it happens sometimes, is you start in one place and then you kind of shift around a little bit and end up somewhere.
Yeah,
completely different, but you know, it's just the path, I guess. It's
exactly.
Yeah,
and I think it could also change as well. I could see myself working like, I don't know, like an NGO or like working in a school or doing that kind of thing as well. So I feel like your passion kind of stays the same, but you just change maybe how you're expressing it. Yeah,
yeah. It's actually, you took the words right out of my mouth. That's what I was going to say too. Yeah. And how do audiences respond to the work that you put out? That, like all the writing that you're doing?
Mixed emotions. Our audience is brutal. I definitely learned to not read comments too much working at this job, because there's no point. It just makes you feel like crap. But also some of the comments are really amazing as well. So it's like, how do you feel the validation and see the end of the story without feeling sad because someone says that you're a terrible journalist and you're like, but we get a lot, like, because a lot of my stories that I like doing are around sex. And I think that people, because a lot of other news platforms don't do a lot of stuff around sex, and so people kind of find it maybe quite confronting, or they don't see it as new. So we get a lot of comments saying like, how is this news? Like, I thought you were re-news, why aren't you doing the news? And so I think people find it maybe a little bit like annoying that people that we do a lot of content around sex and pleasure. But at the same time, people also really love it as well, particularly those that are you know, not cis or not straight as well. I think a lot of our content, like Liam, one of our journalists, he covers a lot of amazing queer issues around sex as well, with his new series Queer Academy. And so I think if you were, say, queer and young in New Zealand, there are very few things that you can, like, at school, often they won't talk about it very often openly. So I think that Re had become a space where people can come to and know that that's talked about a lot more openly. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of value in it. It's definitely a mixed bag, but I think majority people really appreciate it and love it a lot. Yeah.
And what was your own experience like with sex education when you were growing up?
Actually, decent. It was not great. I think in the scale of what I've heard from people, I've done a lot of interviewing about sex ed, and I feel like I kind of sit in like the middle probably. I went to Western Springs College in Auckland, so that was like quite a liberal school, which was lucky. But even then, being in a liberal school, the sex ed was just pretty average. I think it was probably like what was the go at the time. But, you know, I still remember being like split into different classes for different genders, and lots of kind of like those anonymous kind of question boxes where you'd put in a question, but a lot of the time it was just people making jokes and couldn't take it seriously. And it's understandable because you're also at an awkward age where everything's kind of like silly, so I get it. But I had a couple like quite awkward teachers who you could clearly see they were uncomfortable as well, so it wasn't really fair on them. So it just was like, I think it was probably like a lack of maybe lack of prep, lack of training, I don't really know, or just not. I think also the issue that I find as well is that PE teachers are often health teachers, but I feel like PE and health are such different things. Like, I think to expect someone to know about sports and like nutrition and all that stuff, but also to know about sex ed is so massive. I think that that should be two separate things. So I think a lot of my teachers that did sex ed were really great PE teachers, but when it came to health, it wasn't quite their strong suit. And so I think that, definitely I had one really great sex ed teacher who was really amazing, but I think it was just, very patchy, I think. Mm-hmm. Luckily, I grew up with a mum who was extremely open. Cool. Like, couldn't wait for the day to be able, where it was appropriate for me to talk about sex and have the community chat, like, which is quite unusual. I think I've got a lot of friends who had families who still really haven't had proper like in and out, but my mum, she couldn't wait. She still loves it. And then I have a sister as well who's a year older than me, so I kind of had that, like, she was kind of going through it and I kind of got a bit of that through her, which was nice. Awesome. But still, you know, when it comes to like peeing after sex, I didn't learn that until I had like several UTIs, and then it was like, is that why? That would have been really nice to know.
Like five ago.
straight away be like, just so you know, peeing after sex really helps, because I didn't learn that until I was like googling like, why is this happening in my sister?
Yeah,
and uses peeing after sex. So yeah, and then also just little things, like I actually did an animation last year about, you would have seen, about the clitoris. That's how you probably came across a real that particular project, but didn't know what the clitoris looked like until last year, pretty much. I knew what the outside looked like, I knew what mine looked like, but in terms of the actual organ, it took me 25 years to figure that out. So I think there were massive gaps in my sex ed. I'm glad that it wasn't stigmatized, but it was still just like so many blind spots. Had to kind of a lot of trial and error.
It's when I started here that I again learned about what the organ of the clitoris actually looked like, because I think I was like 22 and I was like, how have I gone my whole life and like not known this?
I know, they don't teach you that.
No, I was shocked.
I was shocked as well, how big it was. I thought it was just like, in my mind it was just like a little kind of like, because they call it the beam. Like, I thought it was just like this little kind of beam that just like was kind of in and kind of out, but it's like, it almost looks like a penis. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah, and it like engorges and stuff too. Like, it's bigger, and then like, it's, I was like, there's so much about this that I did not know. I
had no idea.
Yeah. And so how did that go, having the, like, the birds and the bees talk with your mum? Was that like, did that feel like comfortable because you were like ready for it, or like how did that go?
A mix. I think initially I was kind of like, this is embarrassing and gross. She was really great because she actually bought me some books. Like, I think it was called like Girl Stuff. She'd use like that massive kind of girl Bible that me and my sister had, and then like other kind of random stuff that we could kind of read through if we wanted to. But yeah, it was awkward because you're just kind of like, I don't know, it's all just very new and everything. And so like, but she, she's been amazing. She was, if I ever had any questions, she was the one to be like, you know, figure it out on your own. She would always help me out.
That's so cool.
Came to like, yeah, figuring out like condoms or tampons or anything like that. So yeah, I just feel like I was very lucky. It still felt awkward because you are just young and you're just like, I don't really know. I think part of it as well is you don't know what to ask. And I think that's what's really hard about sex ed, is because like with the UTI thing, for example, I didn't even know that was linked to sex. I just thought it was like something to do with something else. And so unless it kind of comes to you randomly, you don't really know what to Google. And even when you do Google things, so many responses pop up that you're just not sure what's the actual answer. But I think that, yeah, sex ed has to kind of come to you because there's so much to know and you don't even know where to start. And so,
yeah. And I think part of that too is like, with, again, linking that to the UCI thing, I guess they probably can't teach it in school because then it's teaching you like how to have, they've seen it as teaching you how to have sex so that you can't go there.
Yeah. Just like the abstinence thing. We definitely, the abstinence was a big thing that we like, and with that word being said a lot. And a lot of STI, like a lot of my sex was STIs, which I think is like great that you learn about it, but also if you just learn about STIs, sex is really scary. And I think people see sex as just like thing that, you know, you'll get warts from, which can happen for sure. But there are ways you can kind of get around that. But yeah, I think, yeah, I totally agree. There is this. Yeah, I don't really.
Yeah, it's definitely made into quite a scary.
Yeah,
scary thing.
And people are having sex. I think that's the thing, is that you can't stop that from happening.
Yeah,
so it's better to know than to be left in the dark and, you know, and I think by accident or whatever it is.
I think acknowledging too that people are having sex for pleasure, like
totally. That didn't happen.
Yeah,
that wasn't a thing. Pleasure wasn't a thing. Yeah.
And in terms of the work that you're doing with Renews, is there any like particular aspect of sex and sexuality that you really love to explore further?
Oh, that's a good question. I feel like there's lots more to be said around pleasure. I think that's something that is quite hard to maybe to talk about because it is also very different for different people as well. But I think more around that. I've actually just pitched a series, fingers crossed, then it gets funded from NZ On Air, but essentially that it'll be a series called What Sex Ed Didn't Teach You. And it's just like bite-sized animations. That will be one of them. Actually, the example that I had in the proposal was doing it about peeing after sex and why peeing after sex actually is really great and why that helps. But yeah, I think they're just seeing more and more.
Yeah.
There just isn't enough and it's just so patchy. And yeah, as I said before, with sex ed kind of changing in schools as well, I think that the media has a massive role to play when it comes to making it available to everyone, regardless of what school you go to. Because I think the research that I did showed that I think it was like 25% of schools, don't quote me on this, I have to check, but do good sex ed curriculum, and then about half are doing like kind of average, and then 25% are not doing any at all, or they didn't really have much of a plan.
Wow.
I'll get the research for you, but it's just like a very interesting how, because we don't actually have sex curriculum in New Zealand around sex ed, it's all very kind of voluntary. There are, you know, RSE, there is curriculum that you like guidance on how to do it, but I think that because you don't have a set curriculum, it depends on what the school wants to do. And yeah, it's also the teacher as well, how comfortable they feel and the training they get. So it is just depending on who you are, where you are in the country. Also, parents can still opt their child out of sex ed as well. So I feel like media has a massive role to play where, regardless of what school you go to, if it's religious or not, or if your parents are really conservative, you can still access that for free. It's getting harder and harder to get that at school.
Yeah, absolutely. And is there a particular story or a piece of work that you've done around sex and sexuality that's really like stayed with you?
That's a good question as well. I did a lot of work about sex work last year. We did, because of kind of coinciding with that Red Light Boys series, I ended up going to one of the New Zealand Sex Workers Collective, used to be called NZPC. They had a national hui that kind of brought together all different sex workers from around the country to celebrate how many years it's been since DCRIM. And I ended up doing quite a long feature on the history of sex work in New Zealand and how it's gone from, yeah, essentially horny colonizers kind of came here and were like, I want to have sex, and it became, we actually had quite a booming sex work industry in like Brussels, for example, and then it became really stigmatized and quite dangerous, and then now we're the first country in the entire world that has that had decrim. So it's like with this huge history, so mm-hmm. I think I learned a lot from that piece, and also did another story that came from that, kind of spun from that. One was doing a story about whakawahine sex workers, so trans Māori sex workers, trans wahine sex workers, sorry, and just learning about the difference that the treatment they got, because when sex work was illegal in New Zealand, if you were a white and cis sex worker, you were still welcome. It was still dangerous, but you could essentially pretend to be a masseuse and work in parlours.
Right.
And because there was a lot of racism in New Zealand and also a lot of transphobia, whakawahine Māori trans sex workers weren't able to work in those parlours as freely, and so they were on the street quite a bit, and they also still are. There's a lot of street sex work that happens in New Zealand, but it meant that they were more visible to police. They were often so much higher in terms of them being arrested or assaulted, or also a lot more dangerous when it comes to clients as well. So I talked to someone called Kayla about her experience being in the industry, from as young as 14 years old to now, into her 60s. And yeah, wow. That was pretty amazing to hear from her story, what she's gone through of like, yeah, a lot of police brutality, a lot of also a lot of love as well, because I think because they were so on their own for a lot of, you know, it felt like they were kind of against the world, because they couldn't really be anywhere else. There was such a beautiful bond between different whakawahine sex workers. So yeah, that was really amazing to hear. I got to speak to a lot of people at the Hui, but also kept in touch as well, just hearing about their stories, and they're just larger than life personality. So it was just, yeah, it was awesome.
It must be one of the best parts of the job to like meet so many people from so many different walks of life and connect with them.
Exactly. And I'm always just so shocked at how you'll meet someone and you hear their story just, you know, off the record, and then suddenly you'll call them being like, hey, can I write a story about that? And most of the time people are like, oh my gosh, of course. And you call them, you know, you had these 2-hour conversations, and they just, they give you everything. We end up taking photos with Kayla, which is quite rare to have articles about sex work when it comes to having a name but also a face as well. So yeah, she was incredible. She gave us her whole story, was so generous. And so I just, I'm always in awe of how vulnerable people are with you. We're essentially strangers, but she's telling me everything about her life. So it's a huge privilege to hear those stories.
Oh, it's sorry. Interesting thinking about that, like the fact that you can meet someone that you don't know particularly well and you can really connect with them and hear so much about them as a person with that, I guess, intimacy that a friendship kind of gives you.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely.
How do you go about like navigating that? How do you make someone feel comfortable to share?
I think I've learned that phone calls are really good to start off with. Like a lot of time just talking to you on the phone, because I think that even doing video calls can be quite confronting, because your people are kind of like just like looking at themselves, and the kind of there's so many more things to think about. But I feel like being on a phone call for someone for a while, and talking about things that aren't just the story as well, just getting to know them and their life. And then what I do when it comes to stories that are more sensitive, like I did one about a young person who was learning how to communicate during sex, that was also for Sex Ed Project as well, the Good Sex Project. And she ended up just getting coffee one morning and just hung out and just talked about, you know, dating and everything. And we just kind of became really comfortable really quickly. And then just not to have the camera with you until like at least like your third time either talking to them on the phone or meeting them. Because I think straight away you get the camera out. Some people are fine. Some people surprisingly are just like, it's okay. But I think about sex particularly, just to have that kind of base layer of just getting to know them for them as a person. It was really cool, because then I feel like you kind of have this bond with someone that's just this, you know, like moment in time. Like I actually went down Auckland City Mission yesterday for a contact meeting, and there was someone there who I did a story about a little while ago. And she was like, oh my God, Tommy. And I was like, wow, it's just so nice that I've met you purely through my job. We're just connected because it's just a story about her upbringing. But yeah, this is people that you just have these beautiful bonds with that you've shared a lot with. But
yeah,
just like this, yeah, this little moment.
It's very special.
Yeah, it is.
And in terms of like, because obviously you've done a lot of work now around sex and sexuality, has it changed your perspective on sex and sexuality as a whole through all the work that you've done?
Yeah, I think that one of the biggest things that I've learned, which was actually the Good Sex Project, was a nice kind of symbol of that, was communicating during sex, like in my personal life, because even though sex was always really open at my home, which is really amazing. I've got a group of girlfriends who we talk about everything with, and it's always been like I've never felt uncomfortable talking about sex. I didn't actually know how to advocate for myself when it came to like being with a partner or being with someone in bed for like a really long time. And that wasn't anyone's fault, that wasn't the person's fault. I felt safe. It was just that I actually hadn't learned what to do. And so I think that doing so many stories about sex has meant that I can't shut up about it now. And so yeah, I think that also, to be honest, dating has been a massive change there as well. Just meeting new people and feeling comfortable just to be like, hey, actually, you know, learning about the orgasm gap and be like, why the fuck is there such a big orgasm gap that's on there? And like being able to be like, you know, the sex isn't finished when you orgasm, actually, like it's the journey here. It isn't like you're done. There is actually like, you know, there's mutual pleasure and what I would like to do, and knowing what you like as well. So I think that weirdly through my work, my sex and my personal life has gotten a lot better, which is really exciting.
That's great.
So I'm like, this is great. Yeah, had known this, you know, and but no, so that's been a really amazing thing, just like having the confidence to be like, I deserve, you know, pleasure, and I deserve all this. I learned that a lot through my job as well. Yeah,
absolutely. I think why is there no like class in school about communication? Because I feel like, and not just in sex, but in terms of like friendships and relationships and work, I just feel like it's one of the most important skills to learn, is how to communicate with people, and there's no crash course on it.
Absolutely not. I don't really understand, because, and unless you come from a family where you talk a lot naturally, those are the kind of things that you just don't ever have those conversations about, and so you just go into a world, like even just you know, starting to flat with people, like there's so many things you have to communicate around, like bills, like who's kind of the head flatmate and how the rent is divided and who cleans what and how often you clean. Navigating. Communication. 100%. Like communications, I agree, is not at all what you think it is. It's very much not about that. So I think there should be, how to talk.
Sort of moving more broadly into your work, what do you enjoy most about what you do?
I think one of the things that I love the most about Ree particularly is that we have so much freedom with what we do. I think it's quite rare that I think I get assigned stories, I don't even know, probably like less than once a month, maybe like every now and then. Like, for example, like if there's a breaking news event, maybe like I need someone on this, and that's just, you know, that's who you have to do that. But I think because we're slower news, we have the luxury of being able to pitch pretty much all of our own stories. And a lot of my stories just come from talking with my friends, because my friends, first of all, follow Ree, but second of all, are the audience. So I'm essentially writing for my friends, which is amazing. So if they find it interesting and they're like, oh my God, I thought up this idea that I don't really understand, or this is so strange how this is happening, and then I'll just be like, hey, Anna and Mandy, I've got this idea for a story. And a lot of the time it's just like, yeah, great idea. So it's cool that, talking to your friends is also kind of like your homework. And you're just, your notes in your phone is just like the amount of, like, just can't even understand what I'm trying to say. Like, just keywords, like middle of the night, like, oh my God, I've got this idea for a story. Which does mean that it's hard to switch off, because everything is a story in a way, because I'm living in the world of my audience.
Yeah.
But it is cool, because then it means everything I'm writing about I care about, and just things that I want to know about. I think that if I have a question, it's cool that I can actually spend a day interviewing experts to find out the answer to it, and then I can write about it and then let everyone else know. So I feel like I'm learning a lot just for my own my own benefit.
Yeah. Is there something that you find particularly challenging?
I think initially I had a lot of anxiety when it came to my job, and so I was like very, I don't know, my mum calls me a watermelon because watermelons like grow to the size that you give them. Like if you put it in a box, they'll grow to be like square watermelon. And so when I did my dissertation at uni and stuff, I would stress and almost I actually cried over it as well. And I would, even though it would be done a month early, I would still work on it for that extra month, and I would just take as much time as I possibly could when I could just leave it and just get it done. And so I think I brought that behavior over to Re a little bit, and I found that I was overthinking a lot of things, and like being quite tough on myself, which was not very sustainable. But I think over time gotten a lot better at being able to just know that not everybody's going to be perfect. Also no one knows what went wrong. Only you're your harshest critic. You know that didn't work out, or like an interview didn't something fell through, but your audience has no idea that happened, and so they just take it as what they've got, and a lot of the time they just are like, this is great. So learning that whatever you do, the audience will never know. There's the bad side of it. But also I think in journalism, it's very easy to compare yourself to other people because you're like, you know, your byline is there every day. You can see people's bylines and you see their work, and it's kind of almost like university, where it's different because like it's like putting your essay out there, but no one really could read your essay at university. Only really read it to the teacher, but it's like doing an assignment, and then the whole world can read it, and it has your name on it. And so you're kind of like reading everyone else's assignments, being like, "Oh, that's really good. I should have done that." So there's a lot of a lot of comparing myself, but I think that healthy competition is really good as well. Like I've got some colleagues that I look up to a lot that are doing amazing work, and I'm always pushing myself to try and, you know, keep up with them. And I think we did this showing for a series on demand recently, and the director got interviewed, and she said, what I've learned is to always surround yourself with people who are better than you, what they do, because otherwise you just kind of plateau and you stop learning. So I feel like it's nice to feel like you're you know, you can always get better, and you have people around you who are really amazing because you're like, oh fuck, that's so cool, I can do that, and I get inspired by that. So
yeah,
at the same time you're like, oh my god, I want to get better, but then you're also like, I am getting better.
Yeah.
Which is great because I came into Re as a writer, and now I can, you know, do video and edit and all those different things. So it's growing a lot.
Yeah.
Being kind to yourself is the biggest lesson. Yeah.
I mean, I was gonna ask you, I was gonna say, what piece of advice would you give? Is that what you would say? Be kind to yourself?
Yeah, I think being kind to yourself is massive. Particularly when the audience can be a bit mean as well. It's like people also just say things that don't mean them as well. Like I think it's so easy to type things out and just not just see that as, you know, necessary, like not, this doesn't bring any value to you to listen to them. So just to do what you do.
No.
Just I think do stories that you want to do for your personal gain. And then you learn so much as well. I'm just grateful that I have a job where I can just do what I feel is right, and then it usually is of interest for our audience. But just be kind to yourself is a good one, though. I think that that's can be hard because journalists often burn out quite quickly because it's such a hectic job, and particularly if you're doing quite traumatic reporting and, you know, COVID and then the election, and it just feels like non-stop. So I think just taking a moment and pacing yourself is really important because we need journalists, and we don't want to lose them all at once.
Absolutely. Is there anything that you would like to add that we haven't spoken about, or anything else that you wanted to mention before you wrap up the podcast?
If you don't follow Re, you should follow us. I think our best platform probably is Instagram. So if you wanted to follow, like, it's called Re News NZ, that would be amazing. And also we check out inboxes as well. And my email is also on the bottom of my story. So if you do want to see something be talked about, or if you actually have a story as well, I would love to hear from you as well. So my email is just zoe@renews.co.nz. But yeah, I just think it'd just be great to hear from more people about what they want to hear about, particularly when it comes to sex, because I feel like it's such a good way of doing stories when it's there's like the back and forth from the audience and also the journalists, not just being just like saying it into the world and knowing, not really knowing who's listening. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, it's great to hear from people.
Perfect. Well, so if anyone out there listening has any story ideas, make sure to send Zoe an email. You might see a piece that's inspired by your idea.
Yeah, definitely. Particularly if you want to us write you as well. If you have a cool story, it'd be amazing to do some more features, particularly video. If you feel comfortable being on camera, that'd be amazing.
Oh, amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Zoe, and for speaking about your work. It's been an amazing conversation. So thank you.
Thank you.
We really hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you want to find more of Zoe and her work, you can find it at renews.co.nz, or you can find them on Instagram at renewsnz. Before we sign off, we wanted to remind you about our two books that we have available, How to Talk with Your Kids About Porn and The Organ Education Forgot. These are both available as downloadable PDFs or in print, and you can head over to sexandspace.com to grab your copy. If you do, you will be educating yourself about a very important subject and supporting us and all the work that we do. If you'd like to support us in other ways, we'd love for you to buy some merch, which is also available on our website. We have both mugs and t-shirts, and when you buy one, you're helping us to continue to do the work that we do. As always, thank you so much for listening and being on this journey with us. Until next time, safe travels and see you on the next episode.